across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, by the looks of it, the weather's a little bit better at the moment. It's very variable right now, but the sun is shining, which means we're winning, and the rain has stopped. So, you know, what's not to like? Heading into the month of June now. Very important that the summer develops in the way that a normal summer does. You know, just enough warmth, not too much heat, but just bright sunshine. It's lovely to bask in that. You know, I don't even want to think about the winter on the way. Remember, you can always go to my website, theunexplained.tv, designed and created by Adam, and the webcast or the podcast got out to you also through the auspices of Adam. You can always go there, follow the link and send me a message from there. Thank you for all of the emails. I see every single one as it comes in. And if your email requires a response, then of course it will get one. And please don't forget to check out and be part of my Facebook page. That is the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. It's the one with the logo on it. You can't miss it. If you go to Facebook, just check in there and you'll see all the latest news about the show. Anything that I'm doing, details of it, if there are any changes in anything I'm doing, I will be posting about it there on the Facebook page. That's my primary source of communication with you. Thank you very much for being with me, bearing with me, and staying part of this big family that has now been assembled, if that's the word, for 16 years or more now since I started the first podcast, sitting in this very leather chair, my dad's old TV-watching leather chair that has got quite a few American brown leather patches on it. And, you know, one day we'll have to be replaced, but I don't want to think about that day. But, that's by the by. But I've always done the podcasts and, indeed, 2 years of the radio show sitting here in this chair. Okay, two items on this edition of The Unexplained from my TV show. Got to keep remembering to say TV, not radio, but it's, you know, radio as well. From my TV show. Number one, Congressman Tim Burchett, who is a man who essentially said in the media after the recent May 17th UFO-UAP hearings in Washington. He basically said that he thought the cover-up continued and the whole thing was a joke. I got him on the show. He kindly came on. I asked him why. Interesting conversation from my TV show. So that's item number one. Item number two is a catch-up with the great Paul Sinclair in Yorkshire. So those are the two things. Let's get to them. Item number one now, Congressman Tim Burchett, about the recent UFO-UAP hearings. Big news conference this weekend. You might have missed it. It may not get covered by the papers at all. It might get covered in the papers during the week, but we're telling you about it here now. It happened in Utah. There were some of the great luminaries. There's that word again of the UFO and UAP field there. People like our friend Avi Loeb, the professor from Harvard, Jaime Musan, who's been an investigator for years, and many others, all at this event in Utah, USA. And they were discussing, partly, and analysing some brand new apparent UFO and UAP footage that was taken from a helicopter, from an Apache helicopter. This is that footage.
Tonga 281, taxiing north of Tower 2 West Slopes, one count.
281, Roger.
Wow, those three really fast flying jets up there?
Probably some A-10s or some F-16s. Not looking up there. Request our longbow 281, lane 4, request to West Slopes.
Now, the action that you should have been looking for, and I know that it wasn't the easiest thing to see, was towards the top of the frame. We'll bring you that, for reasons that I will explain, we'll bring you that footage again a little later in this hour, and you'll get a chance to look at it more closely. But the apparent darting and moving objects or lights were at the top of the frame in the middle there. And as far as I'm aware, and maybe things have changed since I came in tonight, the Daily Star is the only newspaper to pick up on this story. It said, astonishing new footage appears to show three lightning-quick UFOs hurtling across the U.S. skies in front of a state-of-the-art Army helicopter, an Apache. The video was said to have been recorded November 6, 2018, 40 miles northwest of Tucson, Arizona. In the video that you just seen, an Apache helicopter's co-pilot and gunner witnessed three objects dashing in a loose triangular formation across the sky as the aircraft prepares to take off. Now, it surprises me that this hasn't made news yet, to a greater extent in the United Kingdom. I don't know what's happening in America. Maybe if you're watching or listening in America now, you can tell me. But I think it's going to. And it was certainly one of the main topics of conversation at that news conference, or that big conference that happened in Utah over the weekend. We'll talk more about that coming soon with Christopher Plain from The Debrief. Let's talk about this now, if we can. Newsweek reported this story this way. U.S. Congressman Tim Burchett has called the UFO hearing that took place on the 17th of May a total joke, and I quote, Burchett's comments were made in a tweet shortly after the House subcommittee hearing on government investigations on unidentified flying objects or UFOs. It was the first meeting, we know this, we talked about it last week, first meeting of its kind in 60 years to talk about this thing. I think we have Congressman Burchett on a video link up now. We've been trying to establish this. Yes, we do. Congressman Burchett, thank you for coming on my show. How are you?
Howard, I'm honored that you'd have me on, brother. Thank you. And I apologize for the casual way I'm dressed.
No, that's absolutely fine. I apologize for the casual way I'm dressed. But at least I'm...
Looks like a formal t-shirt to me, Howard. You look good.
Well, it's about as formal as I get, Tim. Absolutely.
Right
now, look,
on.
You described these hearings that we talked about in detail last week
as
a joke. You also said, certainly reportedly said, that the UFO cover-up that a lot of people have been talking about for decades now continues. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think what I said was we got hosed after the meeting. I was the only congressman that showed up outside the members of the committee. And the whole thing, top to bottom, you know, I suspect that the people they had testifying were very patriotic Americans. I have no reason to not doubt that. And that from their little sphere of influence is what they talked about. Yet when they were showing a video, they showed a video. It was a speck on a screen, and Adam Schiff, who I don't agree with on anything, we're very cordial, we're actually friends, opposite side of the aisle, asked a very pointed question. He said, what exactly am I looking at here? Because it was just a speck, and they, you know, we have the most advanced technology in the world. There's no question the United States of America is very advanced in that, but they couldn't stop a 30-second film to show one screen of this speck flying by because there was a glare on it was a canopy, and a fella had a cell phone, a pilot, and he was filming something as he was flying by. Now, we've got the so-called Tic Tac videos that have been on 60 Minutes, not TikTok, which is all the young people call me and say, hey, boomer, it's TikTok. I say, no, it's TikTok.
We have so much in common, I think we do, too.
Yes, sir. So, well, I have a 14-year-old daughter, but that's the video they should have shown, and they didn't have any of the pilots that were there. We had a pilot that was in the audience, actually. Somebody had snuck him in, I think, with press credentials, and he was on the USS Roosevelt during that incident. Why not bring those people in and expose that whole situation? Why not?
Well, that's a very good point, and it occurred to me, too, while I was watching this. It looked to me, I mean, it was wonderful to have these people talking about it. We can all agree on that. But it seemed to me to be a bit of a missed opportunity. There may well be some more hearings coming up, we're told. What sorts of people would you like to see at those hearings, and what do you think, from what you know, will be said if those people get called?
Yes, sir. Luis Elizondo, you know, somebody like that, somebody with some credentials in the community and give them the permission to speak about what they know. Stop with all the, I can only tell you that in a closed briefing or in the skiff in a secret environment. Stop with all that. But the American public is ready for this. What have they got to hide? I think it's, I got a theory about that. We can go into that. But I just think that they, I think the arrogance that we exhibit sometimes in government, it kind of surpasses all my reasoning that I can come up with, because there's no reason not to.
Tim, if I may call you, I've been calling you Tim.
That's what they call me.
Okay, well, if we may, I'd like to take this across our commercial break that's coming soon, because we got to you quite late, and there's a lot more to talk about, so I'd like to just kind of extend this a little. But, like I said, missed opportunity, just in a few seconds, you know, you must have been, I won't say annoyed, but peeved that they didn't seem, although they were all well-meaning and they were talking about the stuff, they just didn't get to the point.
I was ticked off. You're absolutely right. It was, somebody said, I guess you were vindicated. And I said, what do you mean? I said, well, you said they weren't going to do anything and it would be a diversion. And in my opinion, a lot of it was. I was correct in that. It was a diversion. We were not told what they could have told us and what a lot of people in the audience or that were watching it at home, I was getting texts from people, people that were saying, hey, I didn't know you were involved in this issue. This is a cover up. I mean, these are people that are qualified people. I've talked to former pilots, some of the best in the world have told me, in fact, that this went down.
All right. Let's pick up on that in just a few minutes. We've got to take some commercials here at Talk TV in the United Kingdom and indeed around the world. Just in one word, though, Tim, just before we go to those commercials, from what you said then, that stance on it all, the way that the hearings went, that was deliberate?
By somebody. I don't think it was the people in the room. I think it was the people that organized it. The, the people that are higher up that we will never have a, we will have a hard time getting to.
All right. Let's pick that up in just a moment. Congressman Tim Burchett here. The man, remember, who called those UFO hearings that happened on the 17th of May a joke and said that the cover-up essentially continues. Tim, let me ask you this. I think we have to be very clear about this, because for a lot of people in the United Kingdom, this is something that happens a long way away in the United States, and they don't think that it affects them. In fact, it does. It will affect all of us if truths that some of us believe have to come out do come out. All of this has got you concerned. It got you annoyed when those hearings happened. So I have to ask the reason behind that. In other words, can you give me some clue as to what it is you are being told and by whom about this whole matter?
Well, I think it's very layered. It's been going on for so long, and I think it's worldwide. I don't you know, I could say the cover up is I believe with it, in my opinion, there's something they've recovered something from somewhere, and to think that. That as you walk out at night and look at God's vast heaven and see a starlight, and the light from that star left there before the time of Christ. I mean, that is the vastness of this universe, of God's creation. And I think that it's either, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be a foreign entity. And we know if it was China, they would own us. If it was Russia, I've said this before, Putin, he's such an egomaniac. He would land a UFO on the White House lawn, get out bare-chested, probably ride a unicorn across the lawn and wrestle Joe Biden, get in it, head back to Mother Russia.
I mean, in other words, if some, as I was trying to say to Jeremy Corbell last week, that if somebody here on Earth, some power here on Earth, had control of this technology that's so superior, then they would have demonstrated it in a different way. They would not be playing fast and loose with us. It wouldn't be like this. So the the only other conclusions that we can come to is that there is a power beyond, you know, what we can see here in control of this, or something else is happening.
I think it's a hybrid of that. I think it's something that we've recovered at some point. It be at Roswell or something. I don't know what happened at Roswell. That's, again, happened. Something that has happened that we have some sort of corporate entity that controls it in collaboration with some people in our government, it's somewhere in that have controlled this, because you got to realize a lot of these occurrences happen over restricted areas. The Tic Tac videos, the USS Roosevelt, these other things, and they're not happening over a trailer park.
No, indeed. I mean, that was an area where there were naval exercises. I mean, look, we're getting to the point here that I think is important, and it's a point that's come out a number of times over the years on this show and many other shows that do this kind of thing too. If we saw those hearings as honest hearings, and those people there were honestly debating this issue that needs to be debated because the time has apparently come for it, then there are two forces at work then, aren't there? If what you've just said is true, then there is the government and those honest people having that honest debate on May the 17th. And then there is another entity that may have recovered material from, don't forget that Roswell, as we all know, 75 years ago this summer. Something may have been recovered then, perhaps in subsequent crashes or encounters, and is now being deployed by somebody on this earth, but perhaps in collaboration with something else beyond this earth, but whatever it is, there's somebody behind the government who knows the truth about this.
Yes, sir. I believe it's, to put it a little more succinctly, I guess, I think it's a recovered craft at some point. I think we've recovered something. And
we're trying it out. We're testing it.
Right. You remember Robert Oppenheimer, right? The father of the atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Oak Ridge National Laboratory is in my backyard. I don't represent Oak Ridge, but it backs up to Knox County and They've got great pizza over there if you ever go to a place called Big Ed's Pizza, but that's beside the point. But the but over 6,000 people there work there that live in my legislative district, the second congressional district. And the way I run for office, there's no way in the world that Tim Burchett's the world get elected, but I knock on doors. I knock on thousands and thousands of doors and talk to people. And I can remember when I was in the state legislature, my daddy fought in the Second World War. My mama lost a brother fighting the Nazis. She actually flew an airplane in the war, and dad fought the Japanese in the Pacific. But I'd always talk to these folks about what they did during the war. I remember this one fellow said, well, I wasn't in the war. I worked at Oak Ridge. And I said, dude, you fought the war. You just did it on the home front. And I asked him what he did. And he said, well, he really didn't know. He said, I knew after the war when we developed the bomb, but you got to imagine they helped create this bomb. He built a switch. He worked on this where they made a switch that was within the bomb, but he never knew what he was doing until after the war. And so that's how compartmentalized this stuff is. But Robert Oppenheimer said when they created the bomb, I don't know if it's not, I'm wondering if it's going to destroy our world. You know, if they could never get, and what he meant by that was, he didn't know if they could get the nuclear reaction to stop. And so this technology, if we've got it, and if what I've been told is accurate, they can't really control it, and they can't do it in the way that it was completely recovered. They're reverse engineering a lot of this, and they really just don't understand what they're dealing with, some of the folks. And I believe that's why it is so compartmentalized. And that's why I think until we have somebody at a very top level brings forth some information without permission of their overlords, then you'll see. And until that point, they will continue to condemn people like me in the media. They will put things out. They will try to destroy us. And you know, I'm at the point where I just don't care anymore. I'm sick of it. I see that, and I see the frustration on Americans' faces over this stuff.
So you're saying that people are clamoring for the truth. There was also, that was the public hearing that we were talking about. There was also a classified hearing. Now, I know that you will be bound by a million protocols about this. But can you give me an idea? But did you get to hear what happened there? All right.
Not allowed to. And I was told I was going to get to speak.
Right.
And I was going to ask some questions.
So why were you not allowed?
I don't know. I got a text that said, you, in fact, the chairman has said that you will not be able to speak.
Boy.
And so,
we've got to be very clear about that. You're saying that effectively, and I don't want to put words into your mouth, but they tried to shut you up.
Well, they didn't come see me and tell me not to speak, but there is a protocol in the committee, and it is a very select committee. That committee is chosen purely by Speaker Pelosi and Leader McCarthy. Now, Leader McCarthy will be Speaker McCarthy here in a few months, but it's still the same. You see the leadership issue. And honestly, I'm the 435th most powerful member of Congress. So there you go.
So your name didn't come, as we say here, your name didn't come out of the tombola. Our time is precious here. We don't have very much of it, which is very sad.
Thank you, Howard.
But I want to make every second count here. What are you going to do about this now? You say that you don't care anymore. You feel that people want to know about this. People in your own constituency are talking to you about it. They want to know more. What are you going to do?
I'm going to keep listening to the people. I'm going to keep speaking the truth because it's the public wants it. I've received attention, and I'm on Twitter at Tim Burchett, and you see I've increased my followings by thousands since this has came out. This is a real issue with a lot of people. I received messages from people in my own hometown, Knoxville, Tennessee, educated people that are concerned about this issue. You have to imagine we have an uncontrolled object in our own airspace, and they admitted to that in the committee meeting. So that should be a cause of concern to all freedom-loving
people. There are some
people
who would say that should be priority number one. Just lastly, Jeremy Corbell on this show told us last week that he had seen video evidence that the U.S. military had fired on these things. Now, that's very important, and it was happening regularly, as regularly, he said, on this show last week as the previous Friday. So it's a regular occurrence. Do you know anything about that?
I wouldn't comment on that, but I've had conversations on that, but I don't doubt his word. I'll just leave it at that.
Congressman Tim Burchett from the U.S. was an excellent guest, and we will talk with him again because there is an awful lot more talking on this issue as it reaches critical mass, it seems to me. What do you think? Second item is, with all the commercials and furniture taken out, conversation with Paul Sinclair, the author of the Truth Proof books, and of course, making a new documentary at the moment about the strange creatures in the forest of North Yorkshire, or North East Yorkshire, which is ongoing. You'll hear him talk about that. So, from the TV show, here is Paul Sinclair. Friend of this show returns, Paul Sinclair, the man behind four editions of the Truth Proof books, a man behind a documentary, which I think is still in progress, as they say, but a lot of work has gone into that, and a man behind an awful lot of events and conferences. Paul Sinclair, if you are not familiar with him, is based in Yorkshire, and his bailiwick, although it's kind of expanding all the time, but the area that he covers is an area of high strangeness that, if you can imagine, in the days of the old Yorkshire television, if you live in that kind of area, they always used to proudly display the Yorkshire TV area map. Think of the eastern part of that map. It's no good if you didn't live in that area. But all the way down from sort of Hull and maybe even Grimsby there, up towards Scarborough and Filey, and then up towards sort of Whitby beyond there, and then further towards North Yorkshire and the Broxah Forest. I think that's basically it. It's an area that, apart from Hull, I haven't really visited that much in my life, and I've been everywhere. Paul Sinclair, man behind those various books, including the fourth edition of Truth Proof, which I have in my hand here, which has been inscribed to me by Paul. Thank you for that. Paul is online to us now. How nice to see you, Paul.
Great to be on the show, Howard. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah. What, you've got a map in the background. Is that your area?
That's correct, yeah. And there's loads of pins in it for various things of an unexplained nature that have occurred around. Predominantly, the map's displaying the headland of Flamborough Head, and beyond, we're coming inland, we've got Bempton and Buckton and Speighton, and go around the coast to Filey. I did it for my own benefit at first, like, but obviously it all reveals a picture, doesn't it, for other people.
But for you, over these years, since we first did that first conversation together, and you said, was I all right there? I said, Paul, you're going to do an awful lot more of this. That whole coastline, that whole area, and the bit that goes inland from Bempton and all the way up towards the forest in the far north, it's a gift that keeps on giving, isn't it?
It's steeped in strangeness, Howard, and I don't think it's because I'm so immersed in the subject and researching constantly. It's been there long before me. I mean, I'm just walking in other people's footsteps. You know, you touched briefly on the documentary Wolflands that seems to be going on forever, but we are putting a lot of effort into it, and there's only two people making it, and the absolutely amazing witnesses. But when you look back and when you go back through it, you're looking at writers from 120 years ago. There's an interesting guy called Howard Brayley who wrote about the creatures that we're documenting from these witnesses today. So nothing's changed, you know, and I'm not, as you know before, Howard, from speaking previously, I'm not trying to say that these things are living, breathing, somehow sentient beings that have managed to go under the radar in these places. The North Yorkshire Moors National Park might be over 525 square miles from coast inland of forest and moor, but I still don't believe that we've got living, breeding populations of these strange, unidentified cryptids. I think they're something else. And
something else?
Yeah, I really do. Obviously, there's no denying what people are seeing, as in the description, but they're coming from somewhere else then. Should I reword that? You know, I mean, the area that I research quite a lot or find myself immersed in at Bempton, there's little pockets of strangeness within the area itself. And, you know, it's only by looking back at what we've found out over years and years, you realise that all manner of unexplained phenomena are presenting. The cryptids are just something I never thought I would become interested in. It were only writing the first book, and the local papers kindly put in adverts for me saying, you know, local author wants stories of the strange, should we say, and I'm thinking I'm going to get UFO reports, alien abduction type reports, and that was my interest due to my own experiences during childhood. But then I received reports from this little village in North Yorkshire called Flixton, and It's about 11 miles from Bridlington, where I am on the coast. But people are reporting a bipedal, fur-covered creature in the shape of a man. And, you know, you get people rolling their eyes and thinking, well, this is an impossibility. And I guess I were pretty much the same. But when you get the reports, Howard, from independent witnesses, unconnected to each other, all different walks of life, different viewpoints, not necessarily anything to do with the unexplained, who've encountered, who've seen, then you've got to add a little bit of truth to it. And that's basically what the documentary that me and myself and Les Drake are doing is about, documenting these witness accounts. The witnesses' accounts go back from, well, gosh, 1930s. We've got witnesses in living memory who know of things that have been seen then to present day. And then you can step back in time to the reign of King Athelstan. And at Flixton, we've got the refuge that was built to protect travellers, so the old writing's safe from wolves, which we know would have been prevalent in 937 AD, which is, what, 1,084 years ago. So we know wolves would have been prevalent, but there were no more apex predators because the writings go on a little bit further. It says, for the protection of travellers from wolves and an infestation of savage beasts. Now, is Paul Sinclair saying, oh, that's got to be the werewolf-type phenomenon? No, I'm not, but we've got to kind of think, well, what was the infestation of savage beasts? And why are we getting these reports still from this area?
But you're dead right, Paul. I'm sorry to jump in here, but it is so fascinating. And I know that you're just back from that forested area. There are other places in this country that I know well. I mean, you know that I'm from the opposite coast. I'm from the northwest coast. And I lived very close to a large forested area near Formby. And, you know, apart from the natterjack toads, as far as I'm aware, somebody's going to correct me on this, we don't get reports like that there. But there are other places, like Mid Wales, for example. I did the show out of, as you know, out of Liverpool a couple of years ago and drove home through Wales. And I thought, I'll go through Mid Wales. Now, Mid Wales has a huge, forested, lonely area. And yes, you do get reports of occasional bits of strangeness going on, mainly big cats and that kind of thing, but nothing like this. So I guess the question I'm coming round to, is it something that is to do specifically with that area that you're investigating, or is it just the fact that more attention has been, you know, given to it by people like yourself and, of course, those people back in history who've looked at it and recorded things there?
It could be a bit of both. It could be the fact that, like we said earlier, I'm so entrenched. I really do kind of go at these things when I'm doing this work, this research, because I do look upon it as work, because I'm up at 5 a.m. and I'm still at it. I mean, I've had no sleep. I've been in the forest and I've had a few hours sleep this afternoon. And the folklore of the area kind of tells you that it's always been here, you know, all the way along the East and North Yorkshire coast. Obviously, this is not before the written word, but we've still got these reports that have carried down and carried through time of the huge dogs with glowing eyes that are said to haunt this coastline.
Well indeed, that's the one report, isn't it? And I know we've talked about it before, but it never fails to chill me. Of these, you know, experienced outdoorsmen, they would call them in America. There were three of them, weren't there? They had a cabin up there, and something stalked them, effectively, didn't it?
Well, there was the gamekeeper in a forest called Stape, which would be about 12 miles inland from the coast. And in, I think it was 2002, he used his base as an abandoned farmhouse. He used an abandoned farmhouse as his base. He'd been working there a number of years and just came across this. The forest had literally grown around it. It's not been occupied since 1956. It's called Brownhead Farm. There'll be literature on the internet about it and the location. And he decided to use it. And in 2002, his cousin came to stay with him for a few days. And whilst walking back to the farmhouse, because people, it's not just cryptid type phenomenon. I would never want to be labelled as a cryptid researcher. And I will go to this story in a moment, Howard. I think it's multi-phenomena. I think everything's linked. Everything touches the other type of the phenomena, regardless of whether we know how the mechanics of that work.
I think in our last conversation on the podcast, you talked about electromagnetic disturbances in that area that might play into it.
Well, it could well do. You know, off the coast of Bempton and Flamborough, and we'll probably jump back to the gamekeeper if you want to, but sure. There's the old maps will say a magnetic anomaly is said to exist in this location, and then other maps won't make any reference to it. And I've spoken to trawlermen who've worked that area and worked the sea around there, and 10 years, 15 years, and never come across it. And then they'll be, as they say, steaming out from Bridlington or Scarborough and past this area. It's 18 nautical miles or allegedly off the coast. I suppose that's the epicenter. We don't know how far it spreads out. And all of a sudden, the compasses are just literally spinning, and they know where they are because the seasoned men of the sea. But for all intents and purposes, it's telling them they're somewhere else. And this happens once, twice in a fisherman's lifetime, but it's there. And interestingly, I mean, we've got not just reports of missing time along the cliff tops, but we've got reports of advanced time with a trawlerman who I've known for a number of years. And they left Bridlington Harbour, and I think it was 2018, with a fishing party that they were taking. I've got to be careful here, but I think it was called, they were going to a place called Big Ridge. And I think the total time from Bridlington Harbour should have been about 3.5 hours. And they got there, I may be wrong, I think, because I haven't got the information in front of me, an hour and 20 minutes sooner than they should have got there. It was the father, the skipper, and his son, who was in his 20s and qualified to operate the boat, who took the fishing party out. And they'd been up quite early in the morning, 4:30, getting all the bait together. And they took about 8 or 9 anglers who were going to do some boat fishing. When they get to the end, what's called Head End, Flamborough Head, the father said, I'm going to get my head down and have a few hours sleep. Wake me up when we get there. And everything's in a plotter on the boat, so he can't go wrong anyway. And he didn't seem to have been asleep. I don't know, in his words, 10, 15 minutes. He said, and son shook me and said, what's the matter? What's happened? He says, we're here. He said, and I'd only just gone to sleep. He said, but when I actually opened my eyes fully and looked around, he said, I couldn't believe what I was looking at. He said, it was in a full 360, everything was, in his words, it's a strange analogy, he said, it was the colour of a golden Labrador. He said, everything was gold. The sky, he says, I couldn't see blue. It were warm, but there's no sun. It's as though everything's behind it. The water looked like oil, but it wasn't oil. And don't forget, these are seasoned, experienced men.
So this is a kind of Bermuda Triangle type
literally
experience.
It's an incredible story. And and another thing he noted, the silence, which seems to follow lots and lots of events of, shall we say, high strangeness, this lower silence. He said everything was silent. He says, when you put in all your buckets with your bait in, when you head out to sea, he said, you're followed by a cloud of seagulls. They associate that. Well, it is, it's food. They know it's going to be there. He said, not a bird in sight, nothing. He said, no, I was worried. And he said to his son, how long has it been like this? He says, well, not long after you went to sleep, really. He said, so I set the radar, which was set at about 10 miles, when it went to 50 miles, and it's found nothing. 20 miles, 30 miles, there's nothing. Started to get worried. He said, at one point, I thought we were in the eye of a hurricane. He said, I've never experienced anything like it. And absolutely getting worried that a boat followed them out of the harbour. And I'll say that because all radio contact was lost. He looked at the plotter, and he said, it looked like we'd been stood for 15 minutes and then it's not followed a mark. It's done a jump. And not, but I don't mean a jump from one place and then to Big Ridge.
So that apparent skipping forward in time was actually recorded on a plot.
It was. And so,
that's amazing.
So this had happened. He said, and then suddenly, he said, we're getting worried. I'd set it to 50 miles. He says, we were literally about 12 to 13 miles off Bempton. He said, so we should have hit something, cliffs, you know. He said, and then all of a sudden, the radio started to crackle. We've got communication with the boat that followed us out, who thought we'd sank. they were getting worried, didn't, you know, because what happened was they weren't following each other constantly. They followed them out of the harbour and they were going to meet at the same place, but the boat that was behind was going to stay at a place called, I think it's the Ten Wrecks, and do a bit of fishing there and then meet up with them. You know, when I say meet up, just in the same locality. So radio contact started. He said the sea suddenly started to get back to normal. Seagulls appeared and everything just seemed to snap into normality.
I mean, it's a great story. And the people who told you the story were very sincere about it, and they recorded it as clearly as they could. It sounds, like I said, clumsily, a bit like the Bermuda Triangle, but off Yorkshire. What can be done about that? How could you take an investigation into that forward? Because it's a great story.
It's difficult, Howard. You know, I mean, I've spoken to a number of fishermen who've experienced the magnetic anomaly, should we say, the disturbances and the compass malfunctions whilst in that area. Mm. But lots of time in between. I mean, some of them have only ever experienced it once in 20 years. So and other trawlermen have never experienced it, so they probably roll their eyes at it. But I think the proof is that it's there. Not necessarily what the time advancement, what you touched on, but the anomaly's there because the old maps do talk about it. It is said to exist.
So what I was about to say about it probably won't apply then if it goes back that far. You know, I was thinking, well, maybe there are military, you know, submarines there, military vessels of some kind, maybe Russian vessels that are there but covert, and they might be using some kind of technology. And we know that electromagnetism affects people's brains. I mean, we've only got to look at Havana syndrome and the reports of that. But if those reports are similar and they go back a long way, then that can't be so.
No, but what you touched on there, Howard, is correct. There are, on some of the maps, it does say, and it's not far from this, it's a little bit further out, that there is a submarine training ground out there.
Right.
So that's interesting. And when I contacted, years ago now, the Historical Records Office, because I was looking into an aircraft crash, December the 12th, 1985, Tornado ZE610 that crashed in that area. And I weren't doing it in connection with the magnetic anomaly. Yeah, it was of interest. But interestingly, when I spoke to the people and I said where it was, he says, oh, we call that, and it was a tongue-in-cheek remark, the Bermuda Triangle of the UK. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, so interesting in itself. I mean, tragedy, that aircraft loss. I looked into that because on the 16th of December 1985, a trawler from Bridlington called the Betty, that was its name, and three-man crew retrieved the navigator. Unfortunately, they caught the navigator in his ejector seat and brought him aboard. So it had been submerged like for 3 or 4 days. But what I found interesting was that the papers of the day also said 36 miles to the east, a second body in an ejector seat had been found. However, it was not the pilot, yet only one aircraft crashed. You know, there were lots of strangeness. I mean, and I didn't intend talking about
it. And that's been documented. I mean, that person?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've got the Board of Inquiry report as well. I think I'm probably the first person to have got it. I don't know if anybody else would have ever even asked for it. I did a lot on the first book, Truth Proof One, on that aircraft tragedy. You know, because this is entertainment for some people, Howard, and obviously it's of great interest to some people, but we've got to also understand that people have lost their lives as well, you know.
So a real human tragedy with question marks still hanging over.
Yes, yeah.
I want to move you on because we've got a number of things to talk about here, and there's never enough time, as we all know. Some people who saw, we will get to the werewolves, by the way, for those who've inquired. Some people who saw something very strange on the beach at Speeton. Now, you know, given our previous conversations, this won't be for the first time. But what about that story? What's that?
Interesting story, and I've spoke to him several times. And I went to spoke at the OLM conference a few weeks ago, Outer Limits conference, and these people were there. So we ended up having a long conversation, and I've had a few more conversations on the phone with them. They live local to the area, about 4 or 5 miles away. And in the summer, I think it was June June 2018, this lady and her husband went for a walk. They parked the car up and went walked, I would imagine, from Speighton and walked down the beach towards Reeton. And there's an area there. The cliffs start at about 30 degrees and they literally go vertical at 420 foot at their tallest, at their deepest, at Speighton. Well, the midpoint, they're at a place called Black Cliff. I knew it well as they were describing it to me, because there's been reports of big cats there. I got an unusually large footprint there of something as well years ago. But they said, as they're walking back towards the car, and it's quite a warm day, cloudless sky, as people play, you know, couples and children on the beach, the husband points to his out to his wife about 25, I think they said 25 yards from Black Cliff, where there's a ravine and a stream that runs down to the sea, out onto the beach. They can see about 5 foot off the ground, an oval shaped, about 4 foot deep, 2 foot wide, oval shape that looks like oil on water or jelly. It's literally there. It's defined. They said it was 2D in shape. They could actually walk around and look at this thing. And he's looking at it, and there's a small child near it. And at one point, they thought he were going to actually walk through it. And they're just absolutely mesmerised by what they're looking at.
And it wasn't a jellyfish.
No, it's in the air. It's 4 foot off the ground.
Right, so good.
Sorry,
there are many jellyfish that can do that. Okay.
No, they're saying it's about 5 foot off the ground. And oval shaped, and it's just suspended, and it's, I don't know, gelatinous and oily in texture, almost like a mirage, but just.
And was it emitting any kind of light?
No, they could almost see through it. It was just localized to that spot.
It was transparent.
They literally walked around it looking at it. I think they found it quite, I wouldn't say frightening, but a little bit more than unusual of it.
So almost as if, you know, we all had those things that made bubbles when we were a kid. You know, the little can and the little hoop thing, and you do that. So almost as if somebody'd been on that beach and created something huge, well, very big, that floated 4 foot off the ground that looked a bit like a big one of them.
That's a good point, yeah, like that. But, excuse me, it wasn't moving. It was stationary. Yeah, that is a good description. But I find that interesting, Howard, because in that particular area, I wouldn't say that spot where that was, we've got lots and lots of reports. You know, back to the 1980s, where people have reported camping on the beach, the one where the young boy, his mum and dad had let him, I don't know, he was about 15 years old, and they were on holiday, and he wanted to go and light a fire on the beach and sit, feeling a little bit independent. And he claims that he saw from the cliff at Speighton, he sees halfway up, so he'd be about 200 foot up off the cliffs, off the ground, midpoint, a sphere, a white sphere that looked like the moon. And I've spoke to these people, or this man now, as he is, I think it was 1985, I think, 84, sorry. So we've just done the tornado 85. And suddenly became very frightened, set off running. This thing's slowly coming up the beach. They go from the white chalk cliffs to sort of claggy clay, I mean, very heavy clay. There's a lot of fossils in it. There used to be a group years ago called the Friends of Speighton Clay, which is interesting because obviously we've got ancient crustaceans in the rocks and all sorts of things. Hid there, expecting this white light to pass. Short time, I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, looked out, there's nothing there. There's lots of reports, Howard, from around that particular area. When I was looking into the animal deaths, should I say, the mutilations, they were occurring on close proximity to that as well. So lots and lots of things. I mean, whether it's something within the geology of the land that's enabling this stuff to come through, I don't necessarily think that the UFO is connected, as in cryptids are somehow travelling in UFOs or spheres of light. I don't think that's happening, but I do believe that there's something enabling all manner of unexplained
phenomena. But those people who reported what they reported to you at Speighton were very clear about what they believed they'd seen.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Crystal clear. I mean, I'll not say the names, but the husband is a school teacher, and the wife has got quite a responsible job.
Right.
A responsible
job. Good, solid upright people, reliable yes. witnesses. Yeah. Okay. I want to move you on again because, you know, television time ticks down on you. We talked a few weeks before Christmas for the podcast and the old radio show about a light. And in fact, we showed a little bit of, I think, did we have video then? I think we showed pictures on my Facebook page that you kindly gave me of this weird green light around Bempton, around that sort of bay area there, that appeared, moved quickly, and then appeared to go into the sea and come out of it again, if I remember that rightly. Have there been, and this happened in November, I think, have there been any developments on that?
The light, I was with a former police officer called Dave Barnes, and it was Dave that saw it, and it came out of the sea at Filey Brig, which would be about 6 miles away from where we were standing. Early evening, so it wasn't black, so I managed to get some footage of this, Howard, as you know, so it's not just a white light on a black velvet background.
And this was November, yeah?
I'm not sure if it was November, if this is the one we're talking about. I think it was August.
Okay.
And I saw it as it's rising. I didn't see it come out of the sea. Dave did. It appeared to stationary for a moment, then travelled towards us. We worked out the speed by the time that I was filming it. I think it was about 325 mile an hour, we assumed this was going. And then it went down and went into the sea. And the footage is there. It's not that grainy. It's quite good footage. When you look at people who are saying we've got the world-beating footage. It's not the smoking gun. It's never going to answer what we're looking at, but it is quite good.
Right. Okay, so, you know, we await more information about that.
I have no more information on it, Howard, except to say that where it went in is very close. Well, we were on land. It's very close to where a lot of unexplained phenomena are occurring. Again, another pocket within the area of high strangeness where things are happening.
Right. I'm sure we'll talk about that again, because these things come round in a circle, don't they? The Hummanby case, I promise we will get to the werewolves. The Hummanby case, we've got to, come hell or high water. Now, I've got your book here, page 72, Truth Proof 4, and I'm going to quote, "Who would think that the outskirts of Hummanby would be the location where a UFO landed one night in August of 1998? It began as an incredible series of strange occurrences and ended in a full-blown UFO incident, and one that has managed to remain under the radar for all of this time." You keep getting new revelations about this Hummanby case. Just give me a thumbnail sketch of what happened and tell me what you've discovered about it lately, would you, Paul?
Yeah, well, in 1996, 97 and 98... two men local to Bridlington, I don't see daily, but I see them quite often, worked at Hummanby. As they were secondary jobs, and they worked at an industrial unit in Hummanby, spraying motor vehicles, repairing motor vehicles. They were younger men, but obviously back in the 1990s. And in June to August of 96, 97 and 98, strange things started to happen. Why then months over a three-year period, I don't know. Coins dropping from the air, gravel dropping from the air, motor vehicles starting without any keys in them, which sounds impossible. Auto electricians coming out, people who are still working at the industrial estate a little bit further down still remember all this happening, what these guys have told me. And ultimately, we'll say climaxing with a UFO landing in August of 1998. And all three men, the man who they worked for as well, all witnessed it. The military were involved. And do I believe the story? I get told lots and lots of things. Yes, I've known one of the witnesses 30 years, and in that time, he'd never told me the story until he was doing some work at a premises, and they ended up talking about the unexplained, and he told the man about it. And this guy, Jim, who's ex-military, knew me, and he said, "You must tell Paul Sinclair." Well, Cat were out at Bag then, and he literally lives 200 yards from where I live.
So more reliable witnesses. We tend to think about, you know, we think about that old TV series, The Invaders, you know, the UFOs touch down near deserted diners off country roads in the middle of the night, where a man too long without sleep, if I'm remembering it rightly, David Vincent, decides to take a break. But here is a UFO that landed, apparently, I'm laughing about this, I shouldn't be, that landed on an industrial estate in Hummanby.
Yeah, it landed at the back of the compound, and it Andrew, that's his name, the sort of key witness for me, that because we'd known each other for so long, and I've now spoke to Dave, who worked with him, and the boss of the premises, who were quite reluctant but has spoken to me and confirmed all what they've said. He said it was as though it was staged. He said, I couldn't believe it. He said, it looked like a classic, what you would think, flying saucer. He said, I stood at the roller shutters. What you've got is a little side door and huge roller shutters front and back, where you could drive big wagons in or buses in, anything. We were a big unit that they were working in, he said, and the shutters were up about 8 foot. So he says, and I stood at the shutters looking down at this thing down in the compound. And he said, he couldn't see if it was floating off the ground or if it was on legs. He said there was all mist and lights, like, emitted from it.
What did they think was happening to them?
They didn't know. He said there's a bubble on top and he can see a little being inside it.
Gee.
And then for some reason he found himself walking back through the warehouse to the front door, and there he was met with one military guy, but they were dressed in black head to toe, who put him to the floor and told him to stay where he was and not to move. He said it was really frightening.
So if there was some kind of special force involved,
yeah, Dave had the same experience.
They were aware of what was happening there. So yeah, they'd obviously been, and we've talked about instances like this before, the military were tracking whatever it was.
The military knew what was going to happen. They knew it was going to be there. That Dave had the same experience. Now, on a night, because Dave was the youngest of this group of people, there was another guy called Alan who's passed away. So obviously I've not got to speak to that guy. But on a night, Dave's mum and dad used to come quite regularly and bring him something to eat, because, as I say, they had day jobs and they used to go to these jobs on a night afterwards. I think it was on the way back, when they'd left the premises that night, they were stopped on the road. We're not going to say by military trucks, because they were black vehicles, and they were taken out of their car and put into a van and shown pictures of where they lived, told that not to say anything about anything that they might hear, absolutely frightened to death, and then released.
Okay, they kept shum about it for 20 years?
They've kept shum about it. I mean, I think Dave's dad's not very well. He's spoken to his mum. She just won't speak about it. He said she really, whatever they were told really frightened them. Now, I've put the social media and various other things around the area. I've asked for more information about Humanby. Anybody who's got information to share, please let me know. And a guy contacted me, said it was 1998 and he was driving back. He'd been working in Bridlington. And this, he said, as he's turning to go down to Humanby, because you have to pass the industrial estate, and anybody who Googles these areas, they're still pretty remote today, people. They're not, Humanby's a village, quite a big village, but it's set up away from...
It's not
from
the kind of place that you'd be just passing through. You've got to make a point of going there.
Yes, exactly. Plus the industrial estate's probably a mile out of the village, and then you've got another 2 miles to the main road. So there's nothing there. But he says there's a car, an hatchback car, I think he said a red hatchback car, sort of parked awkwardly on the road. And there's an old couple looking up. And he stopped his car and looked, and they're looking up at a huge triangle, which he watched with them. Now, we believe that because Dave's mum and dad also saw this. They said that they'd seen this object. That were part of the conversation information that I was receiving when I was researching Humanby. So I believe that's his mum and dad that this guy's talking about, and they did have a hatchback car. So we've got another witness that's seen a triangle. Having said that, what the guys at the warehouse saw said looked like a classic UFO, a flying saucer.
So that wasn't a triangle.
Yeah, but days before, everything seems to... It's all disjointed. Days before, they all saw three triangles coming from the sea. They were out there for a cigarette. But interestingly, they watched these things in the night sky, huge black triangles, and just as they thought they were going to get over the top of them, this kind of switched off or went into some kind of, I don't know what happened, almost chameleon-like, they'd gone. But it's not unique to the area. Humanby has got lots and lots of stories of unexplained phenomena. 2014, it was December 2014, and someone tells me it was December the 14th. I know I've dated it in the book, and some people at a farm in Humanby they'd been to a school meeting for their child, and they were driving back, and they saw a huge boomerang-shaped object. And they rang the farm, rang mum and dad, and said, "It's over towards our farm. Will you go and have a look? You have to go outside and see it." When he went outside, the dad, this thing's going into the distance. He can just see lights. It passed over another farm. There's a wind turbine on the farm, and it stopped the wind turbine. I've spoke to all these people.
The unexplained Paul Sinclair is here. Strange events around Hum and Bee from 1996 through kind of 1998 that are not talked about because the people involved in some of them are told not to talk about them for 20 years. Paul Sinclair, you have many skills, Paul. One of them is an artist. I've just picked up on page 74 of your book here, Truthproof 4, one of your own illustrations, so we can show it because you drew it, of the guy in the unit, in the industrial unit, and I think that viewers can see that. Yeah, we can zoom in on it just a little bit too. But, you know, there is this guy who works, he was about to spray a car, I think, there, because it's a car fixing unit. But you can see something being hurled, or literally throwing itself at him, something that looks like a brick, but is in fact a piece of wood. So the strangeness was not just things that they saw there. There was much more going on.
That's how it started, Howard. I mean, originally David said that he was preparing a car to spray. I'll just give a brief outline. You've seen the picture, I guess, the people watching this, and you've got a toilet block and an office above and a small space between the office roof and the roof of the building. He said, and he just saw from the corner of his eye this piece of wood come off the top and fly past him. He kind of grinned and thought somebody was up there. He didn't think it were intended to hit him. He thought somebody were just having a prank. Then over the course of the night, the guys arrived. The boss arrived, you know, and the other chap to work, and it weren't them. And then over the June, July and August, because it was just them 3 months, things happened. It was an old engineering shop before they took it over, he said, and there was boxes of steel washers all over the place, you know, down the sides. He says, and a steel washer would hit the side of the building. Suddenly, money would drop from the air, or piles of gravel in front of them. And there's no floor in this building apart from that office and the toilet block in the corner. There's no, it's just straight to the ceiling. The power would cut, and all the not all the light bulbs. That would be exaggeration. Light bulbs would bang, but the radio would carry on playing. That's plugged in. All sorts of strange things happened at Hunnamby. They'd go out and there'd be animal prints, footprints on their cars during the night, because they would sometimes work till 10 o'clock at night, 1 in the morning on a weekend. It wasn't unusual for them to work till 3 and 4 in the morning. They were doing fairground rides, open-top buses, you know, custom jobs, basically, and cars, motor vehicles. So all of these things were happening. The compound at the back was quite big, so in the at some stage they let part of it off, and there were a man there breaking caravans down and selling the parts off, almost like a caravan scrapyard. And he complained to the boss one night that the car horns were going in the night and the radios were playing in the night, to the point where they took the batteries out. So they couldn't have done it, yet they still were. So you've got all of these things happening at Hunnamby over the period of 96, 97 and 98.
And to take you back about what you were talking about just before we had to take commercials there, the boomerang-shaped object that was reported, this was all part of the phenomenon. It was something triangular.
But that wasn't 98, that was 2014, and that was also reported in the Scarborough Evening News, that people saw it on from Valley Bridge, a huge boomerang-shaped object.
Okay, so this needs, I know we've said this before over the years, this needs somebody to systematically go in there and try to explore what is happening. Do you think that kind of thing is going to happen? Because you're great at recording the stories, but you know it needs somebody like academic, scientific, to take an interest in this, to take it seriously, number one, but to go there.
We need academia as a whole to take an interest in this. I've got a scientist now, not in this country, helping me with little bits of experiments and things and guiding me in the right direction, because I've realised that it's one thing to tell people's accounts and put them over in a plausible way without sort of just expecting people to believe that these things are travelling from some I don't know, distant world that they've made up in the mind. It's one thing to think, yeah, this stuff's happening and we've got lots of information that's backing it up by independent witnesses. But we need a little bit more scientific evidence. And that's the difficulty, Howard, because most of the things that people are seeing and experienced, they're all sort of kind of etched in people's minds, and that's the place, that's the only access that we've got to it. You know, we've not got great photographs, we've not got great video footage. I mean,
this event in 2014, I've just had a tweet in, and thank you for it, Barry. I mean, it's not in exactly the same area, but it is eastern England. My son and I were walking, this is from Barry, as I say, walking our dog Stella by the River Yare. And having sat down on the seat overlooking the river situated south of Bland Road, Norwich, we were commenting on the fighter jets roaring above our heads at great, and I don't know what the continuation of that is, but I guess great speed would be the word that's missing there. Could that be linked in any way, do you think?
It could be, because, I mean, just because we're looking at, or I'm looking at the areas of eastern North Yorkshire, does not mean that this is not happening outside of those areas. You know, so Barry, you know, there could be some link to it. And there's only one of me, and I welcome anybody that wants to have a go at looking into these things. You know, I mean, and I'm quite happy to share some, if not all, of the information that I've found, you know. And staying with this sighting from 2014, the parents missed it. Husband, wife and child got back home later in the evening, and they went out, they all went out for a cigarette, dad, son, and sort of granddad, son and young boy. And they were sort of discussing it. And then when they looked up, just above the farmhouse, it was there above them. Literally, it's totally silent. They said it looked like graphite in colour with lots of sparkling lights on them, on it, and it wasn't far above the farmhouse roof. And they observed it, an up-close and personal sighting. It was back, and I don't know what the connection was, that I don't think it was necessarily there just for them, but they'd watched it go into the distance. The father, when he was told on the phone, it had stopped the wind turbine at a neighbouring farm that night as it passed over. There's another farm. It's the craziest thing that this guy had got a child's toy sit-on train for sale. You're probably thinking, where are we going with this, Paul? It didn't work. It was for sale on eBay. And as it passed over, or this is what the farmer claims, this thing sprung into life. Lights, boy, bells, everything worked.
Touch of the Uri Geller's there, like starting, you know, getting the stopped watches going. Hey, listen, we've only got a couple of minutes, Paul. That's the nature of the beast. Let's get back to the werewolves. Like all great stories, this one goes in a big arc and comes back to the beginning. So you're just back from the Broxah Forest, North Yorkshire, that eastern part, and investigating the strange apparent case of werewolf sightings over many, many years. And again, you know, it's serious business for those people who encounter it. What new have you discovered as you make this documentary, Wolflands?
The fact that a lot more people claim to have seen these things. Werewolf's just a name, Howard. We're not talking about the full moon, we're not talking about silver bullets, but people are describing a bipedal, fur-covered creature in the shape of a man. We're discovering that people walking in this particular area, and it's a lot of it's around Broxah and Langdale End, and the old woodland, old forests, and as I've said before, we've got 525 square miles of this, stretching the North Yorkshire Moors National Park, are claiming that some people have gone to farmers and said that they thought they've seen a bear, or mountain bikers have seen a large animal and pursued them. We've got two cases now in the documentary where a mountain biker has been paralleled by a huge animal running at the side of him.
Keeping pace with the mountain biker.
So it's kind of non-stop. It's gathering pace, and for want of a better word. And the more that we're finding out and the more that we're speaking about it, the more witnesses we've got coming forward. Obviously, there's got to be a stop on Wolflands. I think we've got 8 witnesses.
Well, no, I was just about to say that. You know, you've been working on this so long and you keep going back there and there's always something new. You know, when are you going to finish it?
If this were a book, I mean, I spoke to Les today because I haven't slept, because we were sat up. We took one of the witnesses from Skinning Grove, which is higher up, into the forest with us last night. We just wanted a few bits of his story with a bit more atmosphere. And I said to Les, I said, if this were a book, I said, and it, say it was 100 pages, we're about 90 pages in, we're very close. It's we're just sort of polishing things now, and we are very close to completing the documentary. But I have been saying that, people, I realise that for a while, but I'm hoping it's going to be worth it. The proof will be in the pudding.
Well, you know, last week on this show, I talked about the aerial school UFO sighting by a bunch of school kids in Zimbabwe. And there's a brand new podcast version of that conversation, which I did freshly on Friday, edition 638 of my podcast, available now. But the guy behind that, Randall Nickerson, worked 15 years to put that together, Paul. So, you know, you've been working a few years on this. You know, these things take time to finesse and polish.
They do, Howard, but, you know, I really do think it's going to be worth it. We've put the witnesses over in a good light. We've made no claims either way that we believe everything everyone's saying, but the area is producing the same type of accounts as sorry for repeating myself, by independent people not related to one another over many, many years. Let's not forget briefly that Tony Dodd, the researcher from, well, the 1990s, sadly, who's passed away, who wrote Alien Investigator, he were researching the Dalby Forest, which is within a few miles of where we're looking. What was he looking into? Animal mutilation and human and strange creatures within the forest. I don't profess to be doing anything new. And we're treading in other people's footsteps.
But you're carrying that torch forward. What's your website, Paul, so people can check it out?
Truthproof.uk. And, you know, there's new reports on there. The books are available if anybody's interested. And anybody that wants to contact me, I've always got time.
And, of course, you're at the Awakening Conference in Blackpool soon. Check that out online. Paul Sinclair, who is a very busy man. I mean, he lives this stuff. He is a really excellent, diligent investigator. Don't forget to check out his website and check out his books, Truth Proof 1-4, and the documentary will be coming in due course, as they say. And before that, of course, Congressman Tim Virchett on the UFO UAP developments. More great guests in the pipeline here at the Home of the Unexplained. So until next we meet here, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.